What is up, everyone? Welcome to episode 16 of the Save Data Cast. I'm your host, David, and every other week on this gaming podcast, we talk about the news, we talk about topics in games, sometimes we review, sometimes we preview. This week, we're going to be talking about our favorite, well, primarily favorite video game tropes when it comes to characters and stories. Just have a fun time, have a fun discussion after all the Blizzard stuff from the last episode, so...
Yeah, you mean the last month, David?
Yeah, last month, last month. But joining me, that voice you just heard, along with his sweet boy Magnus on his lap, that's Zach.
Mm-hmm. Hey, everybody. It's Chaboy and my boy here for you.
And we're also joined by Pridge the Fridge Pridgetel.
Keeping it cool.
How are you guys doing before we go into anything?
I'm feeling good. I took a nap earlier today, which, again, I am loath to take naps normally, but I needed it, and it was good.
Huh. It's Friday, which means it's better than most other days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Before we get into what we...
I got pretty much nothing to do this weekend.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm literally just going to freaking, like, go grocery shopping, do laundry, and then just play... World Ends With You and Pokemon the other, you know, 20 hours I'm awake.
Pretty close to what I'm going to do. So I feel that.
I was going
to
ask, how long is The World Ends With You? But I figure you'll tell us about that in a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have no idea. I mean, like, obviously there's going to be a ton of post-game stuff to do. Because it's a Square Enix game. And two, I can already tell there's a ton of post-game stuff to do. I don't even know if I'm close to actually the end of the story.
Wow.
Jeez.
I think I am, but I don't know exactly how close.
Before Pridge regales us on the new happenings in the Twooey world, let's go over a Fantasy Critic update real quick.
Yay.
We got some things moving and
a bunch of games shadow drop, and some of them got scored.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that shit.
Yeah, so let's go with the shadow drops first. Axiom Verge 2 shadow dropped on, was that Wednesday or Thursday?
Wednesday.
So Axiom Verge 2 shadow dropped. That's sitting at an 82 on Open Critic right now. So given Elise that fat 12 points.
Wow, nice.
And then Boyfriend Dungeon shadow dropped the same day, and on Open Critic has only been reviewed by one person, so it doesn't have a score yet. Granted, that one person gave it a 10, so.
Wow. Holy shit.
Granted, I've played a hefty chunk of that game. It ain't a 10 game, but like...
I'm sure not.
That person's probably like just hella horny.
Yeah. If only Honey Pop 2 could have gotten reviewed by that person.
Exactly.
Who says it wasn't?
Should be doing really good.
Oh, I should go check and see if it was reviewed by the same... That'd be funny. So Boyfriend Dungeon released, since it only has the one person that has reviewed it on Open Critic, it doesn't have a score yet. But having played it, and we'll get to my feelings on the game, and
I'm excited.
Plug, we're gonna be playing that game on stream on Sunday. Look forward to that. Let's see, were there any other releases? I don't think so.
Everything else on my, I'm looking at it right now. Everything else is already up there because we covered all the things that I got end of July. So yeah, no, nothing else.
Did we cover Chris Tales?
That was out same time as Death's Door and World Ends, and not too far away from World Ends With You. So yeah, that's all been covered.
Cool. So then we'll just do real quick pickups and drops. So we had two drops and two pickups. First drop and pickup, Big Games. That's Chris's publisher, dropped Warhammer 40K Darktide. And picked up the indie game Sable. That's probably a good pickup.
Damn, that's going to be one of the ones I picked up.
Meanwhile, Zach's Rectangle Enix, I almost said Helix, Jesus, dropped Horizon Forbidden West, which, did Sony confirm that?
No, I'm 90% sure they have not actually confirmed that, but for some reason, Open Critic let me do that. So.
Oh, okay, cool. It doesn't have to be confirmed delay for you to drop it, though.
Well, Zach used all of his free drops, so it does for him.
We only have a certain number of free drops.
Yeah,
I think we only have three.
I thought David said we had unlimited, but I was wrong. So
We have unlimited drops. Huh. So if the game is confirmed to not be releasing, you can drop it, and you can do that an unlimited amount of times if it's confirmed to not be releasing. The games that have release dates in 2021, you only get 3 drops, I believe, of those.
I could have sworn I done more than that.
Maybe you drop games that were delayed.
I guess so.
But either way, Zach dropped Horizon Forbidden West and picked up Outer Worlds Echo of the Eye, which, smart pickup. I wouldn't even have thought to look for that because I didn't realize we had DLC and expansions enabled. So
here's the thing. It could totally fuck me.
Well, it might not get reviewed. Like
Exactly. Just like the other stuff. So like, at this point, losing Horizon Zero Dawn or Horizon Forbidden West really threw a wrench into my plan. So I had to make a Hail Mary, and hopefully this pays off for me.
I mean, I think in your favor, a lot of video game critics really loved Outer Wilds.
Oh, yeah.
So I would not be shocked if they went back to play Echoes of the Eye. The only thing putting a wrench into that is a busy release schedule for the fall.
For sure.
So, and I think that's it for Fantasy Critic, unless y'all have anything else to bring up.
No.
All right, then, Pridge, let's start with you, since we already sort of did. Regale us on Twooie, dude.
All right. Yeah, I mean, the only other things I've been playing are I picked up Tower Defense for the Grid Awakening for free on Epic, and it's a tower defense game, so that's a thing. and then, obviously, I'm playing my first ever Nuzlocke in Pokemon Fire Red, and that's having mixed success. But really, mostly what I've been playing is Nioh: The World Ends With You. And again, I talked about it a bit 2 weeks ago, but I'd only played it once or twice when that happened. So obviously I have a lot more hours in it now. And I mean, I pretty much have nothing but good things to say about it. I'm having an absolute blast. David, I hope what this is to me is what Psychonauts 2 gets to be to you. because again, this is a game that's over a decade old. I enjoyed it a lot when it came out. Obviously, this many years later, to replay it again, it's dated. But this sequel contains all the things I loved about the first one in just a cleaner, prettier, streamlined, more modern package. Combat vastly improved. Animation style's the same. The soundtrack still kicks ass. I keep finding myself humming tracks literally day in and day out, and like different tracks every time, because it's such a great banger of like electronica and punk, and it just fits the theme of the game so well. Story, I'm curious to see if the story is going to hold up as well as the first one. I like it so far. I wish my main three characters were a little bit more fleshed out. Because there's a lot of like side characters who feel pretty fleshed out, but I feel like two of my main characters, I still don't have like any real super draw to them yet. One of the main characters finally got a little bit of interest in their backstory, so I appreciated that. But there's still two main characters who I'm like, I like you, but I don't feel super invested in you because I haven't got much yet. So I'm curious to see if the story pulls it out as well. But everything else has just been great. I think I'm somewhat close to being done with the main story, on my save screen, my percentage of completion is still like 47. So that just means how much collectible and end game and challenge and time attack shit there is once I beat the game. And that was the same thing with the first one. There were secret reports you could complete to unlock everything. You have to fight things on hard and ultimate difficulty. So I know even if I'm able to beat the story mode this weekend, and that might not even be the case, I'll still have weeks of chugging away at this to get the 100% for it, which I think should be attainable because this game, again, has made collecting a lot less mind-numbing than it was in the first game. So I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully this carries me through to September and then I don't have to wait too long for Deathloop.
Deathloop,
which is my ideal. I'll just go right from this into Deathloop and be in heaven.
Hell yeah. Pridge, do you know how many hours you have in it so far?
I unfortunately don't.
Okay.
It doesn't say on this. It doesn't say on your save screen, so I'd have to go look in my PS5 and see what my actual playtime is.
Mm.
Well, that's a bummer. Because I'm really curious just how long this game is.
Yeah.
Because like I'm interested. Like I might watch the anime so that I can play the Neo Tui and give it a shot. But if it's like 100 hours, I'm probably gonna pass on that one.
Yeah.
I doubt it will. I think people were. I think I heard one place that story that like just that the story, not obviously not speed run, but like mm-hmm. a story of decent completion is like 40 to 60.
Oh, I mean, okay, that's pretty standard for like a
JRPG. Yeah, I think it's a decently standard JRPG length.
Oh, though, I'm checking how long to beat and see if they have one so far. Yeah, it looks like 35 to 45 hours.
Okay,
on how long to beat. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm. Cool.
It was really funny. There was a weird thing where people were able to access the game early before it actually came out. But then when Square noticed it, they pulled it. And apparently someone was like 40 hours into the game when that happened.
Oh, no.
Dang.
They were actually like really close to beating it when Square's like, when Sony's like, you're not allowed to be playing this yet. What the fuck?
Oh, no. In the final cutscene, just like.
It was just Sony just kicks down your door.
The power turns off.
Oh, God. I have done that a couple of times. It's not great.
Sony sends his hit squad. into your house,
and the scope on their gun is shaped like an X, and they say, "You're in our crosshairs."
Oh my god!
You're in our X hairs.
That joke wasn't so bad. No, that joke wasn't so bad. Sony calling the X a cross,
but there's also a circle button, and scopes are circles.
Yeah, but the crosshairs is the phrase.
Yeah, PlayStation calls the X a cross for some stupid reason, but
yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, I hated that, Zach. I'm sorry. Okay. I hated that joke. Whatever. Not because it was bad, just because it reminded me that Sony calls the X a cross.
Whoa. Jason Alia in the chat says, I like how Zach's jokes have evolved into, nah, it was good.
Listen, please, he's always done that.
Yeah,
when I throw up bricks, I admit it. All right? No.
Sometimes.
Y'all have very different tastes from me in my own jokes, which is my curse.
I mean, us and the rest of the world.
I just haven't found people who like them yet.
Pridge, are there any other? Do you want to talk more about Neo Tui or any other games?
No. I mean, I feel like on the most that, you know, again, by any objective standard, it's not a game of the year, but might it be the game I have the most fun playing this year? Yeah, probably. There's a chance that will be the case.
Our save data game of the year will be interesting because I have some different ideas on how we should do it this year instead of a discussion. So, I mean, keep that Neo Tui in the back of your mind, Pridge.
I mean, I'm certainly not going to forget it. I'm certainly not going to just forget it exists.
Beat the game. Oh, where did it go? I don't remember.
Wait, Worldlands with You got a sequel?
What? Oh my god.
Psychonauts 2?
What's this game I have 100 hours on to platinum? I'm on PlayStation.
God damn it.
Zach, what have you been playing?
It's pretty much just been one game, unless I'm completely forgetting, which is possible. I've been playing Bug Fables, which, hey, folks, this is a really good indie game. Holy shit. It perfectly captures the old Paper Mario vibes and like Paper Mario and Paper Mario Thousand Year Door. Like, it's so good. The cast of characters is, for the most part, really fantastic. It's not even the main character because it starts up and they're like the first person in your party, but like it very quickly becomes you have a trio and the trio are like all equal in how they're represented. But like the main bug is like this, like starts off as kind of, oh, he's the cool warrior bug from a distant land come here to seek his treasures. And he's very chivalrous, but also he's got jokes. Dude's got jokes and the jokes are good. And then you got Vi, who's like the bee with an attitude, and she's great. definitely took some warming up to Vi, but I do like Vi. And then you have Leaf, who is like this sorcerer moth who doesn't, who has amnesia, which is a trope we'll probably talk about. It's good. It's really good. It definitely is scratching the Paper Mario itch, which I have not really felt scratched since the GameCube. The combat is super fun. It does the smart thing of like, it literally has like the badge system from the good Paper Mario games. And like one of the badges you can very easily get is like, hey, if you fight something and you're not going to get enough experience from it to really matter, you don't have to do the fight. It just dies. And I'm like, God bless you for that.
Oh,
nice. Okay.
Persona
5 does that in their dungeons.
Yeah.
So that's cool
to
see.
Such a good system. Like I'm only 8 hours into it and I've already found like a couple optional bosses. And they're really freaking hard. It also has like a custom hard mode that you can enact on yourself. There's a badge that is free to put on, but that is literally called hard mode. But if you beat bosses with it, you get like bonus badges that are like pretty good and like significantly powered up badges. So it rewards you for that. It's really cool. It does a lot of interesting things. I like that there is like your standard RPG like status effects like poison, but then you have sleep, where if you get put to sleep, like you can't do anything until you're hit, and then I'll wake you up. But while you're sleeping, you heal every turn, which is like kind of a cool push and pull.
Yeah. I've seen some other games do that, but not enough in my opinion. Yeah.
Or this game's version of Paralyze is called Numb. And while you're numb, you also can't act, but you get extra defense because you don't feel the pain as much. I'm like, that's so cool. I fucking love that. And like, yeah, because it's a Paper Mario game, the battles are like active, meaning like mm-hmm. you have to hit the timing right, or depending on what it changes for thing. Like some of them it's just hold the thing until the right second and then push the thing. Some of them is like mash the button. One of them is like wait 3 seconds and a random button will show up and you have to push that button. That one is definitely the hardest. it made me, I fucked up for the first like couple hours because I was like, oh, X button is here. And I'm like, nope, it's a Switch. I'm playing it on the Switch. X is the location that I'm thinking.
But real quick, Zach, it's really before good. You keep going. Is that, I haven't played a Paper Mario game ever. Is that combat standard for like Paper Mario games?
Yes. Okay. So,
because I played, what was it? South Park Stick of Truth has a similar combat system.
Kind of. Yeah. Definitely.
I know like placement and stuff probably works differently than Paper Mario, but the using abilities and having essentially a quick time event or a timing event for each ability.
Yeah, so when somebody's about to hit you, if you hit A at the right moment, like you'll block and it'll take like half damage. Like the damage in this is like your max health, at least for now, is like just barely in the teens. So like, you know, if you take 3 damage, it's like, oh shit, that's a quarter of my life.
I really like that. So that combat system, so I should probably try this for Paper Mario.
I really recommend it. This is so far is really doing it for me. I don't know how many chapters there are in the game. I'm only in chapter 3. Like I feel like there's probably at least 8. So like I think this is gonna be a lengthy game. And I'm really into it. So I highly recommend checking it out. There's a few things I'm like not super in love with, but for the most part, like right now, if I had to like rate this, it's at least an 85 for me.
Dang. Okay.
Presuming that it sticks the landing with the story, which
I'm
I think it will.
Assuming Switch and PC.
Switch PC, and it might be on other consoles as well, but I know it's Switch and PC. Cool. I'm pretty sure it's actually cheaper on Steam. I think it's $20 on Steam and $25 on Switch, which sucked. But I was like, it's worth it to buy it on Switch because I'm not going to play it if it's on Steam. This is a game I want to play in my bed 2 hours before I go to sleep. So
I respect that.
I respect that. Yeah.
it's worth the $5 for me.
Anything else? Zach?
That's it. Okay. That's it.
I have been playing quite a few games. So I have been continuing down the Final Fantasy 14 road, and that game keeps getting better, which is awesome. I'm into the Heavensward expansion now, and the characters, you can very much tell, like, post-game, like post-launch Realm Reborn content was already better than the original Realm Reborn content, because they weren't, like, on fire trying to get the thing out the door to make the game sell. And then from Heavensward, after the post-game Realm Reborn content, is just another degree of increase of, like, they really took the time to get it right. They replaced a bunch of the voice cast from the original game. And
interesting,
left the old ones in. They didn't re-record. So, like, okay. I hit a point where, like, a main character's voice was completely different, and that's how I knew I had hit Heavensward. I was like, Alphanil, you sounded much more manly for the small child that you were like 5 minutes ago, and now that's you have funny. A much more appropriate voice. Interesting. So they changed a bunch of voice cast members. You can tell that they're getting more time to even record lines. Like, it really did feel like they took the first take for every line in some of the previous ones, because they were in such a hurry. So, like, all the performances are much better, the quests are better, the story is better. My class quests have been really fun. I picked up a second class job finally. So I'm trying out Gunbreaker, which is like a tank, which is pretty cool. You get gun swords. There's nothing not to like about gun swords.
Except for Squall. Am I right?
Well, no, Squall is a different thing. He's not a gun sword.
Wait, what is it called that he uses?
He has a gunblade. He isn't a gunblade.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm still really enjoying it. The dungeons and stuff have improved too, like, overall just massive improvement from the original game, which I was already enjoying. So it's super cool. I had a moment where I almost teared up because, like, a character that I really liked died
in an MMO.
Yeah, so, like, wow. I'm really surprised, because there's this character who I won't name for spoilers, but, like, he's your freaking bro. He was the man, and he is killed in cold fucking blood.
Damn.
And I have never in an MMO been like, I am going to hunt down your murderer and kill them. It was always like, you're dead, whatever. But no, this guy died, and I was like, I would have died for you.
Liam Neeson on the phone. Fucking, I have a specific set of skills. I will find you, and I will kill you.
Pretty much. And, like, I still, throughout the course, I have like 100 hours of playtime in this game already. Like, I have been playing the shit out of Final Fantasy 14, and I still have only encountered one person in a dungeon that was an asshole, and I've played most of the dungeons that are available up to my levels, which is also great. So I'm really enjoying it. It's great. If you have any interest in an MMO, screw old school RuneScape, go play Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah, I've never played Final Fantasy 14. That's a sentiment I can get behind.
Yeah, I've heard the community is extremely
beloved. It's really good. The community is great so far. Let's see. I played one more run of Returnal after the last episode. Turns out runs are, in fact, like 2 hours long in that game. Once you get past, like, the first few runs, it's too long. Yeah.
That's brutal.
For me, this game is the definition of mediocrity, where, like, it's not even like the whole thing feels mediocre. It's just perfect. Like, the things that they do well and the things that they do poorly are perfectly balanced. Like, Thanos made this fucking game.
It's a great descriptor.
It's like
Thanos.
This is a Thanos game. Like, I was having fun with the combat. Like, the story was interesting. But, like, the length of the runs and some of the things in the runs were just so annoying. And, like, the upgrade system between runs, like, Hades had those little, like, piece of candy sort of things of between runs, things you could upgrade and, like, do that made the subsequent runs better. And I don't think Returnal really has that I've seen. And it basically got to the point where I was like, oh man, that run took 2 hours. I'm not playing this game again. So I'm done with Returnal. If you really like roguelikes and you're okay with a really long runtime, you would probably really enjoy this game, because the combat is good. Like, the story is good. It's just the roguelike stuff of it for me holds back the game.
Yeah.
And really just runtime. Like if the runs were 45 minutes, I would play this game more. But it's like 2 hours, like I'm okay. Let's see, what else did I play? Played Dust Door.
Yeah.
So I really like Dust Door. I bought it, I think, last Thursday or Friday, and I beat it last Thursday or Friday. Like, I beat it the same day I bought it.
Not a long game.
I pretty much played it for 6 or 7 hours that day, and that was finished.
That's not the exact length of the game.
I feel so bad about this, because I like the game. I think it's a good game. I just feel like so many people are like, this is like a 9 or one of the best games of the year. And I'm like, it's so not.
I wouldn't go that far.
It's a good game.
I wouldn't go that far. I can see why people would say it was one of the better or best games of the year, just because I don't think there's a banger this year.
Agreed. Agreed.
So like, I can see where people would get that if they like certain aspects of this game a lot. But
yeah.
To me, Death Store, I know I talked a few episodes back about playing Hyper Light Drifter for the first time.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Death Store is just Hyper Light Drifter, but good.
But good?
Yeah. Like, it's more responsive. It has almost some of the same systems. Like, it has the ammo system plus slashing to get your ammo back, which is a Hyper Light Drifter thing. I had a great time with it. The bosses were pretty entertaining. The Zelda-like pieces of it, I enjoyed. Your description, Zach, of it being a 2D Zelda game with good combat was spot on. Like, that was a perfect description.
You are right.
And it had some tropes that I am going to talk about later, so I'll save those things for later. But, like, I had a great time with the game. There were great characters. Zach, how far did you get before you fell off?
Oh, I finished it.
Oh, sorry. I thought you didn't finish it.
No, I finished it.
The Reaper at the end, fantastic character. I loved his design. Just something about a Reaper with a hoodie and a fanny pack just made me chuckle.
You know what? I'll save it till we get the tropes, but I have some beef with that.
I can understand that, but it was very much a for me thing. I was like, that's funny, and I'm here for that.
I will agree with you. It was a cool design for death. Yes, 100%. That is not my beef.
But I had a lot of fun with it. I won't belabor the point, because most of the things I liked and disliked were the same as you two. I'm glad you told me about the sewers, because...
Yeah, I know, right?
I would not have gotten that.
That is buck wild.
Well, game forgets to organically reveal that mechanic to you.
It's not even so much that it forgot to reveal the sewer mechanic. Like, I can understand that. It's not revealing that you can attack in the air and you'll dive down and, like, do a ground slam. Because there's no jump.
I did figure that out.
I even figured that out by accidentally rolling off and attacking one time. Yeah. I didn't know that's how I opened sewers.
See, if I had figured that out organically, I probably would not have needed to be told that's how you get into those things. But, like... Without being told that I can do attacks off the ledges because there's no jump, why would there be an air attack in my mind?
That's Dark Souls. There's not a jump in Dark Souls.
Yeah,
you can do that.
I don't play Dark Souls games. But I had a good time with it. I'm definitely with like you and a lot of critics where it's like a 7 or 8 for me, but it was a good game. I had a lot of fun with it. And the last game
for sure
I will talk about is another dungeon game. That is Boyfriend Dungeon.
Fuck yeah.
I've been playing quite a bit of that game. I think I'm close to halfway or halfway-ish.
Okay.
I believe, based on some hints in the game, that there are 4 dungeons. I do not know that for certain, and I have beaten 2 of them, is where I'm at. And I'm having a great time with that game. The amount of diversity between the boyfriends / girlfriends / non-binary friends and weapons is fantastic. Like, I'm having such a good time with, like, to be fair, this game's combat is not where it shines. Like, the combat is okay, it's not great. But the more weapons you unlock, the more styles that unlock with them, and I give Kit Fox a lot of credit in that each one does feel extremely unique. Because I've unlocked a dagger, talwar, the Epe rapier that you start with, a Naginata, a pair of brass knuckles with claws, a lightsaber.
Damn.
And maybe another one that I'm missing, but all of them function differently. They all have different attack patterns. They all have different specials. They all have different effects, and they all feel very different. So I think that stuff's great. The dating sim parts are fun. They don't really restrict you. So it's really just like date whoever and however many people you want to like have fun.
It's persona rules. It's persona rules.
Well, except persona does usually punish you for dating all the people later. To be determined if Girlfriend Dungeon does that. Yeah, persona, if you date multiple people in like three or four, it backfires really heavily when you get to like Valentine's Day.
Really?
And Persona 5, I believe, does something similar.
I didn't even know you could date more than one person, Persona 4.
You can't. It's hard. But you can.
Huh.
And yeah.
Once I got to the required social link level with one of the girls, I'm like, sorry, y'all. I'm monogamous.
And Jayton Ilea, you can't date a boy in P5. No, you can't. So one thing about Boyfriend Dungeon, most of the boyfriends are in fact boyfriends. they let you choose the beginning. Do you want to be male, female, non-binary, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then they don't restrict anyone you can date, which is cool. And then there's some.
Oftentimes it's like real life. It's hard to date multiple people at once.
Yes. Well, not in Boyfriend Dungeon. It's very easy.
True.
Overall, I'm having a great time. The characters all feel very unique. There are ones that I like, and there are ones that I'm very much like, man, you're a dick. And that's okay. It's a dating sim. Like, I don't think I'm supposed to like everyone. I'm supposed to have preferences and stuff. So overall, the dating sim part's fun. The dungeon crawling stuff is pretty fun, not fantastic, but that's also mired by just coming off Death's Door, which has fantastic combat. So there's that. I'm having a great time. If you're even slightly interested in Boyfriend Dungeon, pick it up. It is super fun. It's on Game Pass if you have Game Pass for PC or Xbox. That's what I'm playing it through. So yeah, I 100% recommend playing Boyfriend Dungeon. It's a fun time, even if you don't play through it all the way. And super worth it.
Just to plug it again, this Sunday the 15th, me, David, and Wes are going to be playing that on stream because we had a code provided to us by the developers, Kit Fox. So,
who are all super cool people. And I guess for context too, like I played, and I think you did too, Zach. Like I played this at a PAX.
Yes. I played it over a year and a half ago. I think you longer than that.
I played it PAX 2019 or E3 2019. I forget which one. No, it was E3. It wasn't PAX. I played it E3 2019, which was even longer ago. So it was over 2 years ago. I played with a demo build that was pretty much just the dungeon crawling bit. And they had a tiny bit of the dating sim part after the dungeon crawl.
When I played, you could walk around the world map or what they had of it, and you could choose one of the three weapons to go on a date, and then you would take them into a dungeon, and then you got to do it with another one just so you could feel the differences. And I agree with you then. I was like, oh shit, these like the combos are totally different.
Yeah.
Which is cool. But I also agree that the combat is not like super exciting and fun.
Well, I will admit the later weapons you get, the combat is actually more fun with. Like they have more entertaining combos.
Further in development, they got better at making cool weapons.
I'm assuming that's part of it. Like as they worked on it, they got better at doing the thing they were doing because it took years. But like my favorite weapon is the brass knuckles with claws.
Interesting.
You can like leap with them. It's great. I love those things. They do a ton of damage. They're super fun. The Naginata's fun. You chuck it like a spear. It's really enjoyable. It's got Hades vibes with the spear in that game a bit. Not as good as the spear in that game, but similar. Mm. And then the lightsaber one's also really fun. So really, all of the ones you get after the initial three are the better ones. They're more fun to play with, even That's if true. The boyfriends are not as great. Valeria, best girl.
Agreed. Also, it's I don't know if you mentioned this. It is on Game Pass. Jayton Ilea in the chat points it out. So yeah, if you have Game Pass.
Yeah, it's super fun. With that, let's get to it. Let's get to some favorite tropes in video games. Or least favorite, depending on how far we go.
True.
Who wants to kick it off, or do you want me to?
I got a good one. I'll start with this. I love it when your playable character starts a video game strong because they are a strong character in this world. Examples being Alucard in Castlevania Symphony of the Night or Samus in Metroid Prime 1. You literally start off with like all your powers, and then through something that happens very quickly in the early part of the game, you lose them all, and then you have to like slowly go back to where you were at the beginning of the game and then beat the final boss. I flipping love that as like a story, but also mechanical like trope of like, you can feel how ridiculously broken you are at the start of the game and just like one shot all the enemies. And then you get to the first boss room. The boss is a little challenge, but you beat it. And then it's like, hey, remember those enemies you just one shot for the first like 15 minutes of the game? Now they take like 7 hits. This sucks. Feel weak, you babby.
We have different opinions on this trope.
Oh, I love that trope.
I have very different opinions on this trope.
I love that. What?
I hate that trope.
Because here's the thing.
I cannot stand the Samus drops all of her power-ups down the drain and thus isn't strong anymore at the beginning of every Metroid game.
It's for me, it's like, hey, you've written this world, and in a lot of these cases, this is like a recurring character or not, but it's like, you've written this world where this character is like meant to be a badass. Can we explain why they are weak in this situation? I fucking love that. I think it's cool.
Okay with it if I don't get to play it first.
Oh,
so like
that.
If I get to play as an OP,
that take of
if I get to play as like a strong character and then they take it away, I'm like, oh no, give it back. It's more frustrating than fun for me, but I understand why it would be fun for other people, especially you roguelike lovers.
I'm surprised I got outvoted 2-1 on this. Damn.
Yeah, it's mostly Metroid is the one that it really bugs me with. It's just like they always have to force some way for Samus to lose all of her power. She gets infected by something. She gets infected by something else. She trips. She misplaces them at the coat check.
Yeah. if like you start the game and like you don't get to play as her powered up, then it's like, okay, that's fine, whatever. Like, you had some weird reason why she's not beefy at the start. But, like, in Metroid Prime, where literally you start and, like, the opening section has you with the grappling hook, has you with the double jump, all that. And then it's like, nope.
He's so mad.
It's gone.
So Ice gets that tilted.
He's so mad. Yeah, no, I don't enjoy that one. Yeah, I'm cool with them just taking away in a cutscene at the beginning, like, your ship crashes, your suit's damaged, and you have to repair it. Like, totally cool with that.
One thing I do want to shout out, because I, as far as I'm aware, this is the only game to have ever done this. In Banjo-Tooie, you start that game with all of the power-ups that you have from the first game.
That's awesome.
Which can be confusing, because there's a lot of power-ups you get through the course of that game.
Yeah.
And then the problem becomes, because obviously you have to learn more things. So by the end of that game, like, some of the abilities, you have to be pushing like 3.5 buttons and then moving the joystick to like use them. And I'm like, what the fuck, guys? It's really cool, but yeah. It's like, god damn.
I feel like that'd be a good thing to use, like, if you made a successful indie game that only had a few powers.
Yeah.
And then like it was super successful, you got a ton of money, you're making a sequel, and you're like, okay, we want to like double the powers. Let's just keep them and add new powers. Like, I can see it working for that.
Give me Death Door 2, where I already have my bombs and my hookshots.
Yeah, it's the thing where like then it gets confusing too, because the tutorial section of the second game is like so much longer.
Yeah.
Because if you're, for me, I actually played Banjo-Tooie before I played Banjo-Kazooie. So I was like, man, there's a fucking lot of abilities I got to learn. And I was like, you know, a kid. I was like, oh, gee, this is a lot I got to learn here off the bat. But it's a really cool idea. I wish there's a reason that Banjo-Tooie is the only game I can think of that did it, because it's not a good idea to.
It's hard to onboard people so that way. People.
Yeah, that is very true from a mechanical perspective. Uh-huh. It's weird,
but it's a cool idea.
I want to do something related with main characters. So,
okay,
one of my favorite tropes, and Pridge, I know, is going to back me up on at least one example of this,
okay,
is having a annoying main character who has like an extreme amount of growth through the like course of the story to where they are like you love them by the end, like they are one of your favorites by the end.
All right, on three, David. One, two.
Tales
Luke
of the Abyss.
On Fabra. Oh, okay.
I said the game. You said the character.
Okay. just want to know we were on exactly the same page, because he is one of the most insufferable main characters.
Wait, which one was that? I couldn't tell.
This is Tales of the Abyss.
Oh, okay. No,
Luke von Frob from the Tales of the Abyss, yeah.
He is a extremely spoiled, whiny rich kid who doesn't want to put any effort into anything. And then halfway through the game, he basically gets a god complex where he thinks he's awesome because he's saving the world and gets super humbled. Then he has
his,
like,
shut the fuck down is what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Then he gets his second personal breakthrough, and he becomes a phenomenal character by the end.
Oh, okay.
It's good. They make you wait a long time to not fucking hate Luke, and it makes it all the more worth it when you actually feel like a cool character. Sorry, I'm stealing this from you, David. I'll let you talk about it.
No, go ahead. I just wanted to make sure one of us got it.
Yeah, I know. Again, it takes a long time for your character to become cool, and once it does, it feels worth it.
Mm.
Yeah, I guess a like subgenre of that trope is whiny rich characters that get their just desserts and like realize how to be human beings is a very enjoyable trope to me.
Yeah, I mean that's you know, it's that power fantasy of video games of rich people being humbled.
It's like, oh man, ouch. I'm rich, I'm basically a god, get fucked, and then all their money's gone, and you're like, ha, you fucking suck now.
Yeah.
I've seen it a couple times, but that's my most memorable one is Luke von Frob.
I mean,
Jason Alia in the chat shouts out Groose from Skyward Sword. That is a great example.
Of doing this in a side character, actually.
I hate Groose, but damn.
Yeah, Groose is a very obnoxious character who thinks he's so much cooler than you and that he's the hero. And then there's a great point near the end of the game where he's like, you know what? You are the hero, Link, but I'm going to still try and help and do something. Mm. And it's a very good moment of growth for a side character in a Zelda game who, in most Zelda games, probably wouldn't need to develop at all.
Nope.
Honestly, probably. Actually, my favorite part of Skyward Sword is Goose's character development.
Honestly, it's not a bad choice.
If you feel that way, you should give Tales of the Abyss a shot, anyone out there.
How long is Tales of the Abyss?
The length of the game. David, take it away.
It's like 80 hours.
Tales of the and it's not 80. It's not that long.
Okay.
It is about 50 to 60 though, which is pretty typical for a Tales game.
Yeah. If we were coming into this fall, I would maybe check it out.
I think Cloud from Final Fantasy VII is actually also a version of this. He is also a version of a trope that we might talk about later.
I mean, if you're talking about it now, just bring it up.
All right. I mean, he's also a sort of amnesiac, kind of, obviously. And we can talk more about that later. But Cloud is another character who is just edgy and annoying for most of Final Fantasy. Until you learn he is like 8 layers deep of PTSD and being tortured and experimented on, and you're like, oh, okay, I kind of get why you're a closed off edgelord. You've had a rough stretch of things. When you finally piece together your shattered memories, it makes it worth it to see you like figure out your own shit and not be just a cold dickwad.
Question for anybody who's played the OG Final Fantasy VII, is he as likable in that game as he is in Remake? Because I feel like in Remake, they definitely give you more glimpses of him being like, oh, he's got a soft spot.
No, he is much less likable in the original.
Yes. That's what in the original, without as much side questing to see him be slightly sympathetic. No, in the original, he's just like, I want to make my money and leave.
No, he is a little shithead until like two thirds of the way through that game.
He is a cold. No, I wouldn't say whiny. He's a cold, brusque edgelord.
Yeah. Mm. That's pretty accurate. Pridge, give us one that I can steal.
While we're sticking on Tails game, let's talk about one of my favorite let's talk about one of my favorite JRPG party members.
Oh,
the cool older veteran.
Wait, we can do this on three. One, two, three. Kratos. I know that one.
I like the cool guy. Sometimes, in some games, he joins your party way too strong. In some games, he just joins at the same level as anyone else. Yeah. But I like the cool. I like the cool veteran who has to guide all the whiny little shits who don't know what they're doing. Whether it's Kratos from Symphonia, Jade from Abyss, Dunban from Xenoblade Chronicles,
whatever your knight is in the entire Fire Emblem series.
They're unfortunately a little less fun because they're mostly it depends on the file. Titania's cool.
Their characters can be good, you just don't use them. So.
Yeah, Marcus is boring. Titania from Path of Radiance is cool. I like the cool guy who has to babysit the little shits. because I don't know, for some reason they just tend to be well written. Obviously, as we talked about, Kratos is, an amazing character in Symphonia. Dunban's
Excuse
a great,
me, it's
you know.
Kratos, thank you very much.
Kratos. he's a great character in Symphonia. I love Dunban in Xenoblade.
It's a good trope.
Bosh from Final Fantasy XII, I'd argue, is another example.
I'm Bosh.
I'm Commander Bosh. No, the actual Bosh.
Yeah.
I mean, from
Bosh is Von Rotsford.
Final Fantasy X, his name?
What? Auron from Titan.
Yeah, thank you, Auron.
Oh, yeah.
Auron's dope.
That is really cool.
Yeah, for whatever reason, JRPGs just seem to write that character well, regardless of the reason. They're always just a fun part of the team, and they end up always being cool.
I feel like the writers, especially for JRPGs, like the main characters are always teenagers or someone who is just barely an adult.
Right.
And like the writers are like 40 years old. They do a better job writing someone who is 40 years old.
Hey, you know what? You got a point there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So you could give me a whole game of just those people. And it would be great. There's your next JRPG. It's the old veteran squad.
Give me a JRPG.
All cool guys.
JRPG dads. The dad squad.
Dad squad. They fought in the previous Great War thing, and they wanted to retire, but now they're thrust back into action. It's the dad squad.
They gotta get the charcoal for tonight's barbecue.
The good dads gotta beat the bad dads.
But oh no, the invading army from the north is coming back.
I just imagine the enemy is just Jekt.
Yeah. A gift from Jekt.
Oh, dude, I saw a meme. It was someone just naming Titus or Titus, whatever his name is, and his name was Reject. And I was like, that was such a fucking good name.
Fucking got him. Damn. Ouch. Ouch, ouch, ouch.
Zach, what you got?
This is okay. I mean, I just read this. This is essentially what we just talked about. This a main character being competent goes a long way for me.
Yeah,
very much into that, which is pretty much what we just said. But this is not so much a story trope, but just like a a trope that does a lot of things for me, both in movies and in games. But text on screen, big, big, bold text when you introduce a character, like stylish. Fucking love that. You just play. We all just played Death's Door. Death's Door kills in that department.
It does.
Love that.
Yeah, it's the Frog King who has like the eight lines. Who has like the
other? That was so good.
You can't read full of titles, right?
That bit was so good. Oh, that joke was so funny to me. That landed real good.
And like, I know me and Pridge disagree heavily on this game series, but I think Borderlands does a fantastic job of like introducing characters that way.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Just like they have a thing, and then like, bam, this is their name.
Yep.
And they give them the little tag, they give them some sort of tagline after it.
Mm-hmm.
Neo, The World Ends With You does that. Oh, every time you need a big character, it sort of zooms in on them, and you get the kanji for their name and their English name as sort of like, across the screen behind them.
That never won't be cool for me.
It's honestly, it's also sometimes even funnier when a game or a movie only does that for like once in the entire thing. Yeah. When shit does that out of nowhere, I'm like, wait, what the? They get a title card?
Even if it's like just for villains or something, like big bads, like it's so good.
I do. That's it's a great thing. I wish was used more often.
I'm with you on that.
I do agree with that one. It's a nice little flavor to a game.
I wish like we could have that. I wish there was a way to have that about yourself in real life. Like when you shook someone's hand, just like behind you is like Zach. I don't know what my subtitle would be, but
the captain.
Jason Elias is like a brawl title card. Exactly.
Yes, like a brawl title card. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking
Pridge,
of
attorney at law.
Exactly. Fucking exactly.
Oh, what would mine be?
Number one psychonaut.
Yeah. Number one corn stand.
I'm down for that.
The beard.
The beard.
I'm down. No, give me Cornstan over the beard. Hell yeah.
Cornstan.
I was literally just like, I was looking at weekly ads right before this for the supermarket to like figure out what I'm making. They have corn on sale. I'm making cream corn tomorrow. It's going
to
be great.
What's funny to me is that somebody would hear that and not like, if they weren't able to read the text, they would hear that and think, oh, like the band Corn. Nobody describes himself as a corn stand and mean
no,
the
I
actual
mean, he spells,
food.
He spells it correctly.
Yeah.
No one means the food. Oh, yeah. God. Maybe like, put corn on the cob stand.
Everybody likes corn. It's just assumed everyone likes corn. It's so versatile. It's like you would never be like, oh, I love potatoes. Yeah, potatoes
I mean,
are
I
fucking
love dude,
good.
I would have gone to Mickey Rooney's Potato Fantasy. Like, potatoes
I was just going to make a joke. What do you mean? Mickey Rooney has to potatoes fantasy. Potatoes.
No, fuck. Like, I literally had a joke at my old job where me and a bunch of friends went from when I first started referred to corn as the sacred plant, which was because of me.
People are going to hear you doing that and be like, oh, these people are really into weed, huh?
No, it's corn. It was the sacred plant, and wheat locoche, which is like this mushroom that grows on corn, basically, was like the basically Satan of the corn religion. Desecrator of the sacred plant, that's what it was. Oh, God.
Oh, damn it.
Corn, am I right?
Yeah, that's it for me. The only ones I have left are all negative ones.
I mean, I got some fun ones. So one that I absolutely love is villains that see humanity as a plague on the planet. I fucking love that shit as someone who doesn't generally like other people. Like,
okay.
Any villain who is like, pollution, humans did it, kill them all. Or like forests are going away, not okay, kill all humans. I'm just like, you know what, I may not agree with your methods, but I feel you, villain. I feel you, I understand, and I'm still gonna kill you, but I feel you, and I I sympathize with your reasons for becoming evil.
Somehow they, I mean, Sephiroth is kind of there in a sense.
Yeah, Sephiroth is definitely there.
And Sephiroth's I'm trying to think
of other examples of that.
Wasn't the big bad from Abyss like that too?
I mean, he hated humanity's reliance on the phone stones. I know,
I feel like that's not a very far leap from like.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tangential. He disliked how humanity operated. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's pretty similar.
And like, I keep going back to Tales games because I'm a fucking psychopath. But like,
yeah, the JRPG games with good stories. Yeah, so but you're gonna find a lot of good story beats in them.
The Yggdrasil, the big bad from Symphonia. Is basically like, yo, humans are racist, which can't argue against that. So he's like,
especially in that game, Jesus.
I'm just gonna make everyone the same race. And you're like, oh, you're gonna make everyone human? He's like, no. I'm gonna turn everyone into a rock.
Wait, that's the plot of this game?
I wouldn't go that far, but if it were plots explained poorly, yes.
That's wild. I mean, that's what Bowser did in Super Mario Bros. 1, am I right? Turned all the toads into blocks.
I mean, that's, sure, if you go by the lore of that game, yeah.
of the instruction manual of that game,
I mean, that's. I know this is anime, but that's sort of Madara Uchiha's plot in Naruto. Yeah. He wants to trap everyone into illusion so there's no more fighting by basically taking away their free will.
Listen,
which I argue is an offshoot of that motivation.
But I love that trope because, like, especially the older I get and the more I see, especially of just like people like destroying the planet and not caring, like, I'm just like, yeah,
it's like the more disenfranchised I get with the world, I think I might need to become a supervillain, y'all.
Dave is telling us a supervillain origin story, right?
Yeah, this really is like,
I'm not gonna lie, if I was ever to become a supervillain, it would be for this reason.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Watch Sleep Lightly.
Billionaires.
Always be ready with an offering of corn if David decides to turn.
That would work. That would 100%
work. May I offer you an ear of corn in this trying time?
An ear of corn so you don't destroy me.
Anyone got any positive ones? Otherwise, I'll do one more and then we can do some negative ones.
I did just remember one love is when the villain and the good guy have to team up for a brief moment.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm here for that.
Love that. I'm here fucking for that. Love that. Such a good bit. It's usually never like the big bad of the game, but like
I mean, that makes sense. Usually they team up to beat
right.
Yeah.
We're like, damn, this is a bad example. The only one that's coming to mind right now is in Super Mario RPG, the original one, Bowser can become a party member for the entire rest of the game because he's not the villain in that game, and that's fucking radical.
Yeah, he teams up with you in Odyssey too at one point. Sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think.
I fucking love that shit.
Oh, I would go, what is it, Halo 2?
Oh yeah, Arbiter.
I guess that kind of works. Yeah.
Because like, it build that Arbiter is going to be the like his rival, and then it's like, oh no, they're kind of on the same side.
A like subgenre of that one is like the big bad joins you early as like a temporary party member, and then you learn later that they're the bad guy, but they helped you.
Like, yeah.
Love that shit. So good.
It's good. It's a winner. It's a winner for me.
I'm with you there. Pridge, you got any more positive ones?
I think of one. I'll interject it later, but
all right, I'll do a couple, give you a second, then we'll do some negatives. Very specific one. Just fucking weird bosses. This is mostly a Kojima reference of like bosses that don't really make sense in the world but are cool. So like
I will say like having like a boss gauntlet or like a group be the villains and you slowly take them out over the course of the game is like 10 out of 10 to me.
Oh yeah.
It's chef's kiss. I love it.
It's so good, and it's better the weirder they are. which is why it feels so good in Metal Gear. Like, you've got a guy who's just fucking on fire. You've got a guy who can command bees. You have an old man who, that's his power. He's fucking old.
I mean, his power is that he's a really good sniper, but I mean, yes.
But mixed in with that is he can stay still for so long because he's fucking old. There's like Psycho Mantis, who's just like reading your goddamn mind, which is just reading your controller inputs, which is super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got Vulcan Raven, who's just buff and carries a helicopter machine gun. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And like, they're in a world where everything else is
normal,
believable
for all intents and purposes.
I wouldn't go so far as normal, but like,
yeah,
could happen. Like, it's believable. Mm-hmm. And then you just have these people in there that are like,
ooh,
outliers.
I don't know if this counts as a trope, but one thing I always think of when I think of MGS bosses is what is her name from the second one?
Oh, I haven't played that one, so I don't know.
Oh fuck, her name is like Lady Luck. Or that's her shitty nickname. I can't remember her actual name. This might be spoilers then. I don't want to fuck it up. But her whole thing is that she can't be shot. And like every fight she's been in, she has always been like lucky and has lived. Cause she never gets like bullets always miss her. Mm-hmm. And she always like, she has like a tragic story of like all my friends that I've gone into battle with have died. Like, I'm the only one who lives. And there's like this boss fight with her where you literally can't kill her because if you shoot her, the bullets will curve around her and you're like, what the fuck? And then there's some final
Kojima
bit
bosses.
There's a final bit where she joins your side and is going to help you take down the villain, because she's like,
back
oh
to the
no
other trope. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But then the villain reveals that her power is a lie and that she had like a magnetic field installed in her body unbeknownst to her, and they push a button and they turn it off and they just shoot her.
What?
Fucking amazing moment. But then there's a point where the boss
just
like,
kidding shoots, you're lame.
Literally, that's what happens. And then they shoot a missile at you, and then out of nowhere she like gets back up and is like bleeding. She's like about to die and she's like, I've got this. And then she like holds a Kamehameha wave stance and the missile curves after everything's been shut down, and it's like, well, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it, and it's such a dumb moment when you think about it, but like, I was so, I like, 14 year old Zach was like, this is the best storytelling of all
time. Is Kojima games just a trope? Like, that's the trope, is just Kojima games?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Like, oh my god. Another one that I'm going to bring up just because Chris isn't here, Killing God.
Real quickly, uh-huh. Zach, you're talking about games where you have to like go through an organization killing each member.
Yes.
So basically, No More Heroes? The exact point of what No More Heroes and I guess Shadow of the Colossus are?
Love No More Heroes. The is like, and No More Heroes also has titles cards.
Yeah, it like, does. That's true.
Well, yeah.
Dr. Beast. Like, fuck yeah. That shit is so cool.
I do love the scratchy voice when you mm-hmm. first accept the contract.
Yep. Incredible. Absolutely speed, incredible.
Speed Buster.
Yep. Fucking Speed Buster, who you never fight.
Now you just
that's a good trope, too.
You just have to reach them. And then you win in a cutscene.
Yeah, exactly. That's also an interesting trope. I don't know how I feel about it. It's like very threatening bosses who are like built up and then like the boss just gets killed by something else.
I feel like it is hit or miss.
It depends on where the game's going. It kind of depends on where the game's going for humor or not.
Mm. Yeah.
Because in one of the Borderlands DLCs, you go to fight this scientist, and as the Borderlands 2 DLC, you go to fight the scientist, and during his entrance thing, he trips down the stairs and dies. And in like Borderlands, it's great because they give him a health bar and everything.
Oh, that's so good.
And then
good.
He falls down and his health bar just goes all the way down to zero because he's this old man scientist and he fell down a ramp.
Fucking funny.
And like, in that situation, it's amazing because like, here it is, the boss fight. Nope, old man just dies falling down the stairs.
Thing, I love that in No More Heroes when they did that, but then the fact that it instantly went back to you having to grind up money to go to the next area and you didn't get the satisfaction of doing a boss fight, which, like, Travis Touchdown, the character, is literally pissed in the game. He's like, what the fuck? Like, I came here to fight a boss. Like, you can't rob that from me. And that is actually how I felt. And then I was like, well, fuck, I guess I have to go do the boring part of the game again.
Yeah.
One of the other ones I had on my list was actually characters who accurately portray what the player feels.
Yeah.
Which is like,
actually, yeah.
Which is characters. Because, like, a lot of times you'll play these games where you go through the fucking ringer and there are these bastions of positivity and fucking invincibility. And they're like, yeah, let's just, I'm hyped. Let's keep going. And then on occasion you get one, like a Travis Touchdown who's pissed. And on other occasion you get some that are just depressed that are like, man, fuck this whole situation. Why am I doing this? This fucking sucks. I'm got blackmailed into doing this thing. I love those characters. Those are great. And I don't feel like that happens enough. Like, the fact that, like, when I was playing Last of Us Part 2, if the characters in that game had gotten fed up after falling through the fucking floorboards enough times, I would have been a lot more sympathetic with them.
Yeah.
If they were just like, oh, not again. God damn.
Yeah. Yeah. Good Lord. That game is, puts you through the fucking ringer for sure.
It does. And like the characters don't, I feel in some cases they do, but in a lot of cases they don't. As you're playing, really tell me how I'm feeling of like, fucking Christ. Like, just when there's a high adrenaline moment, they're like, oh shit, that was scary. It's like, yeah. No, I want you to feel some of that. Like, I want you to feel other emotions other than the fear, like annoyance and pain. and then the last one I want to bring up for our boy Chris, who is not here, is killing gods in video games. I love this trope. It will never get old to me. Yeah. It just won't. I can be Kratos, who is a god killing other gods, or I can be a teenager with a fucking pet cat in Persona. It doesn't matter. It's fun and I enjoy it.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It could just be our like Catholic upbringing, but like there's something of like, wow, killing a god.
Seems
pretty rad.
I'm going to read you my notes for this exactly. So this is my note for killing God the trope as written in my notepad. Yo, I'm a former Catholic and very much now an atheist. I like killing God, okay? I'm a heathen. It is cathartic. Keep letting me kill gods/gods.
So I will actually admit, and a lot of this because this comes up in anime too, this trope is actually starting to get boring to me. In video games, less so, because there's usually a cool fight involved. But as a storytelling element, it's actually starting to get a little boring. It's like, there are shows where it's like, and we worship this deity. I'm like, okay, so we're killing it at the end. I now have, like, I know what the end is. I know what the end is now. The minute Japan introduces a deity, we're killing it at the end.
Yeah, that's definitely a Japan-specific thing, too.
Yeah, again, in video games, it's usually a cool boss fight, so generally I'm not bored of it. But as a pure storytelling element, people are starting to go to this well too often, and it's starting to get a little easy way out.
It's not getting old for me. I see an anime or game with a religion, and I'm like, that god is either fake, or we're killing it, or both. And I'm here for that. Let's keep playing.
God damn.
All right, y'all had some negatives. Hit me with some negatives.
Whoever wants
to start, go ahead.
This is more common in JRPGs, but when it's like, we've got to get the X crystals, or you have to pass the X trials to become the hero. It's like, this is the laziest form of MacGuffins, and I'm tired of it.
That is my least favorite part of Final Fantasy XIV, Realm Reborn, is reliance on crystals.
Oh,
God. Like, Final Fantasy in particular, like, Square RPGs in particular are so about their goddamn crystals. And I'm like, y'all, just make, you, like, literally just for one game, call it something other than a crystal. Just pretend it's not the same MacGuffin, but it is.
It's like one of those things where, like, I get why they do it, because like their first three or four games were all like, you're the Warrior of the Crystal, the Warriors of Light, and it saved their company and made them continue to have jobs. So they're like, oh, we don't know what we're going to do with this one.
Let's just Warriors go back to that same
Let's go get some crystals.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and this was my big thing with Bravely Default 2, it being so paint by numbers. Yeah. Here's the deposed princess from an unlawfully invaded country. She needs to go find the four important things.
Mm-hmm.
Go find the four important things. Win. It's so paint by numbers of here's the person who's supposed to protect the shiny objects. They lost the shiny objects. Go find the shiny objects. And those form the super shiny object.
Yes,
but in reality, the power was inside of you the entire time, Wynn.
I think the trope for me that kind of is the higher level one of those is just... like, you know what the game is going to be at the start of the game.
Where zero subversion.
Yeah, there's zero subversion. Just like, we've got to get the four crystals so that we can have the powers of light and kill the emperor. And that's the game. There's no surprise along the way. The crystals were evil all along. You accidentally summoned the big bad so this is one of those cases where I'm okay with the big bad being killed off randomly. Is like when you do a thing and it summons a bigger bad and that bigger bad just steps on the big bad.
See, I will say I hate that. Actually, one of the ones I wrote was the surprise final antagonist who like
it depends has not how it's been done, in the game. Yeah.
And then in the last 2 hours, it's like, oh, the guy you've been fighting the whole time. No. It's actually this.
Yeah, I should have phrased that better. I'm okay with it when it happens earlier and then they rebuild up to that person.
Yes.
When it happens right at the end. No, fuck off.
A surprise final villain that I've had no time to gain a hatred for or even an understanding of who just, you know, usurps the actual final villain.
Pointless.
It's lame.
It's such a bad choice.
Yeah, it's a lot of Fire Emblems. It's like this is the evil king you've been fighting. Just kidding, it's the evil god.
Yep.
I mean, I feel like most of them are pretty blunt that's gonna happen. Like it's not a surprise.
Yeah, it's true, I guess.
Or it's like, oh, the king summoning a dragon. And then you beat the king, and then guess what? They summon the dragon. That's the extra boss. And it's like, okay, like I saw that coming.
Ooh, one thing I fucking hate is when you win in a fight, but then in the cutscene you lose the fight. Can't stand that. Cannot stand that shit. Yeah. Where it's like you soundly beat
that's
the villain.
True, actually.
And then in the cutscene, your character's like, shit, they're really strong. Oh, how are we going to get out of this one? I'm like, you just beat their asses. You're at full health.
I am going to give props yet again to my favorite game of all time, Tales of Symphonia. There is a boss relatively early on that your first playthrough, you will not beat. It will not happen. If you subsequently do a playthrough and you beat them, it changes the cutscenes.
It
does not just play the cutscene of like, he just beats you anyway. It's like, no, instead of him beating you, he's like on his knees. I was like, oh, you are a lot stronger than you are. Like I thought you would be.
That's amazing. That's some dope shit right there.
Just speaking of Symphonia, I wanted to bring this back when we were like 2 points ago. Cause we were talking about, we were talking about games that are way too obvious what they want you to do. Symphonia is so great cause it subverts that.
Yes.
It's like, take Colette and activate the thing. See how simple this quest will save the world will be? You're doing it, and then halfway through it's like, ha-ha, no.
Why is she slowly dying?
Everything you thought you knew is really fucking wrong. Mm.
She's the chosen one. Ha-ha, ha-ha, sort of.
Kinda. by the way, by trying to save your planet, you're murdering another one. Oops.
God, I love that game so much. I could talk about that game for hours.
Yeah. When I was young, that twist was so unreal.
Oh my God, same.
And they keep doing twists. There's multiple. I'm like, give it to me.
It's a great game. It's a great game.
Let's go.
Undoubtedly.
10 out of 10. 10 out of 10 game. I don't have any negative ones. I legit didn't even think of one.
I mean, we mentioned it briefly. Amnesia is an overused plot point to give a main character mystery.
There are a couple occasions where I've seen Amnesia work well, but overall, no.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it can obviously work, but it's a crutch to create mystery a lot of times.
I also hate when characters have amnesia to like help make sense for the tutorial.
Oh yeah.
I will say bug fables.
Phoenix Wright, Justice
Phoenix Wright
for all.
Too. Yeah, that was a bad choice.
Someone beat me over the head, so I don't remember how court works.
Yeah, that was a wild choice.
So fucking dumb.
But in bug fables, in the opening like tutorial fight, the main character is a warrior, like that is what he is there to do. He's like partnered up with this newbie and he's explaining to the newbie how to fight. And I was like, damn it. Why don't video games do that? That's such a simple way to not have a dumb explanation for a tutorial. Like that was so smart.
A training exercise is a nice way to make a tutorial feel organic. And again, in Witcher 3, the game starts with you doing it with you training Siri. It's the same thing. It's a very organic way to give your tutorial because you're explaining it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if someone's explaining it to you, it's much more organic.
I want to do a positive one that is sort of related to the amnesia one. It can be related to the amnesia one. Games where you play as the bad guy unknowingly.
Yeah, the Braid in Bioshock Infinite.
Braid, Bioshock Infinite. The one that came to mind for me is Spec Ops: The Line.
Mm. Oh yeah, you've talked about that one before.
I think that game. It's been so long since I played it, but there's a lot of like mental illness and PTSD and stuff in that game, and like just figuring out towards the end that you're manufacturing a bunch of like these voices and things is just so cool. And the time traveling stuff of like, oh, you travel to the future and the big bad is you sort of thing, I also enjoy, but like it's more interesting when it's like you've been doing a thing that is bad unknowingly, of like, oh shit, I am the bad guy. And there's so few games that do it, and like all the ones that do it,
there's few games that do it well.
How many others do it? I feel like I haven't seen them.
I don't know. I personally do have some mixed feelings about Bioshock Infinite. I think some of that is me maybe projecting dislike on it like years afterwards, because I think it's in vogue to dislike Bioshock Infinite. But
it is, for a game that I think is good, a lot of people hate that shit for weird reasons.
I don't hate it. I think it's just okay.
It has some legitimate problems, but I think it's a little more hate than it needs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more hate, especially from fucking Chris. But
oh, does Chris hate that game?
Oh yeah, he hates that game.
Yeah, that's fine. He likes RuneScape, so what does he know about good taste? Am I right, true. Folks?
Emma is right, folks.
fuck, what was... Oh, you did mention time travel. That is actually one of my favorite tropes. I feel like in movies, it can be used rather poorly often, but I think in video games, it's done well a lot because you're actually experiencing...
I feel like it's like done the time poorly travel. Pretty frequently, too, but...
That's fair. I just feel like it's such a cool...
It can like, be really, travel, really cool, yeah.
For me, is something I love, like, the concept of, and, like, being able to go back and fix things that you wish you could have changed or done differently, I think is such, like, a cool concept. And being able to physically do that in games, and then often the time, it's not, like, changing story beats. It's like, oh, what if I move this thing here and do this differently, and what does that let me do? I freaking dig that. Jason Elias says, except Sonic 06, which, yes, you do go back in time to prevent Sonic from dying.
There's time travel in Sonic 06?
Oh, yeah, because Sonic gets killed in that game.
Listen, I mentioned this in Slack. We need to make it a donation goal to get a Sonic VTuber, play Sonic 06 on stream. We need to make that happen.
Oh my god.
He's so good. Well, it'd be horrible, but it'd be horrible in a great way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think time travel is a giant coin flip.
Yeah,
that's, I think there are times when time travel is like incredibly cool, and times when time travel is like illogical and wonky and just, I don't know.
It's time travel just naturally gets messy really fast.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's hard to write.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's really easy to mess up time travel. Like if you don't account for just like one thing, people just be like,
well, you wrote a plot hole.
You plot hole. I can be my own dad. Like, shit like that. It can happen really easily. So it's hard to write.
I can be my own dad.
Yeah, I'd love to see a video game where you can make that happen.
I feel like it probably exists.
Nah, probably some shitty like Leisure Suit Larry games.
I mean, I feel like it wouldn't be that hard to make a time travel game where you essentially guarantee your own existence by accidentally having like your mom as a love interest.
Oh god. other things I dislike in games, the like one big choice towards the end of the game. I understand that's realistically how things would work, but like it makes it so annoying to kind of invalidate the last like 20 plus hours of a game with a A or B option that then drastically changes the end of the game.
Yeah, I feel that.
I get Prey. That's another a really one good I example. Feel like they can be good or bad, but yeah.
But like one of the ones that bugged me the most as a kid was the first Fable game. I was like very much the good character, and then the final question is like you beat the boss. And like this guy has like been ruining your life for literally since you were born. Like he blinded your sister, all this crazy shit. You were in jail for like 10 years because of him. And then you beat him. And your sister, who's like this seer character now, is like, you can choose to I think it was like let him live or like take the evil sword, like the strong sword, which is what he had. And I was like, well, I do want the cool loot for the post game.
And I'm like,
and then it became like I picked the sword up, and then it went to a cutscene where I stabbed my sister and then became the evil overlord of the land. And I was like, that is not what I asked for.
Wait, I didn't agree to that part.
I just wanted the cool sword.
I can make that as a trope / mechanic where you pick a dialogue and the result is not what you chose.
To the 10th degree of like,
like the sort of game where it's like the options like scold them, and then your character's like, you fucking piece of garbage, you absolute trash. Like, damn, I didn't mean that hard.
Or it's just like your options are like politely agree or respectfully disagree, and respectfully disagree is like, fuck you, you piece of shit. I just wanted to say no thanks, dog.
I want to somebody should make a game that is just that where it's all dialogue options that are like way overreactionary to what you asked for, and just be like, what? No, that's not what I want. No, stop. No.
I mean, that's honestly, that's a lot of the renegade options in Mass Effect were that.
Yeah.
That's kind of true, actually.
Where I was like, especially since I recently did like the full renegade playthrough, where it's just like, this is dumb. No, like, fuck you. And it's like, shot you in the kneecaps. And I'm like, whoa, that's not what I wanted to do. Or it's like basically choosing between like, yeah, this is cool, and genocide. And I'm like, excuse me.
there is no in between, dude.
Like, come on.
I dare you suggest that there could be.
I don't want to kill a whole entire race. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I just want to shoot this one robot. Damn.
Yeah.
Any other ones before we close out, guys? Really biting a bit to talk about?
I wrote unavailable abilities or areas of the game for like bad story reasons. An example could be, Metroid Other M gets a lot of shit, deservedly so. But also, Skyward Sword has been mentioned a couple times. And in that game, you literally are not prevented. You're prevented from going to certain areas of the map because it's not the time to go there yet, which.
Oh, so there's like nothing in the way. It's just you walk into it and it's like, you shouldn't go here yet.
No, it's the clouds open up because the goddess decides that the clouds should open up so you can go through them, which I'm like, it makes more sense, but it's just like, kinda it's lame, still yeah. A bad reason. Like, if I can go there, just let me go there. I mean, that game has a lot of problems, but it's maybe not the best example. I do hate stuff like that.
Like, basically just having a dismissal instead of like an actual reason why you can't go there.
Yeah. Where it's like, oh, if I don't have the thing to shoot down the door, fine. If I don't have the bombs to blow up a wall that I need to get to the next area, cool. Yeah. But if it's just somebody being like, hey, we don't need to go there yet. I'm like,
But I want to.
But I could. Nothing is stopping me, so.
But I want to go there.
Yeah.
Oh, you bridge?
Sorry. The last one I had was, this has gotten a lot better in the last few years, but pointlessly skimpy clothes for characters.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, see, that's the universal thing.
Pointlessly skimpy clothes, get rid of them. Horny games, we need more of that.
Totally, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying pointlessly. No, but if it's like justified or like it makes sense for the character, or
yeah, like if she breathes, like if she breathes through her skin,
fucking
like,
Kojima, goddamn,
like makes total sense, you know, because. It's never really brought up in the game, but she breathes through her skin. That's why she has... Fucking hate that.
I saw a article that was written, I think, last year, just recently, that was like, wait, you guys, Quiet was actually a parody, so it was okay that Kojima wrote it like that. And I was like, no, it wasn't.
No, was it?
No, it wasn't. That's like M. Night Shyamalan trying to pretend The Happening was supposed to be parody after everyone called it garbage.
Yeah, it's... It's
like, no, you're no. This is revisionist. Revisionist.
You made a bad movie, Shyamalan. You made another bad movie, Shyamalan.
Man, no, really, we need more like intentionally horny games. Come on.
I think that's happening.
It is, but I'm just encouraging it along, like. Mm-hmm. And we need equality horny games. Like, give me hot guys, girls, and non-binary.
That's what makes the real difference, is an equality horny
game. We need horny guys, gals, and non-binary pals. Like, we need all of those.
I will say, we are 100%.
Here's one for you, Monster Prom / Boster Camp.
Yeah.
Champions of this.
We are 100% going to get way more horny villains in the next couple years, thanks to Lady Dimitrescu's incredible popularity. So be excited for 2 years from now when we have a shit ton of tall mommy villains.
Let's go.
Because that is going to happen.
Any other ones from you, Pridge?
No, I feel like we've touched on most things. Touched on most things I want to talk about.
I'm
happy to end with on Mommy Milker. Oh, no, there's more.
The last, you'll probably be happy for this one too. The last one I want to end on is shameless references to other games in the same genre in your game, and the like, just utterly shameless. So the one I'm going to reference is from Death's Door, which is mild, not really spoilers. So after you like do a section, you open a chest, it starts playing music like a Zelda game, it spins around like a Zelda game, he opens the chest, shameless reference, and then just the chest eats you and it's a boss fight. Like, really a boss fight, but stuff like that where it's just like utterly shameless references that are just fun. Mm-hmm. I love that shit. Like the Astros...
subtle fourth wall breaks are excellent in pretty much everything.
Those two, like, even not so subtle ones, like I really enjoyed Astro's Playroom, where they just had characters fucking being Aloy a giant T-Rex like around. Like,
I mean, that was the point of that.
It was the point of the game, but like I appreciate that on a smaller scale in other games too. Mm. That's just like the biggest example of utterly shamelessly being like, hey,
yeah, like
we're just a game of references.
Super Mario RPG, there's a moment where you can find literally Samus sleeping in a bed in an inn. And
if you go talk to her,
she's like, I'm taking a nap after beating Mother Brain. And like, that's it. That's all she says, which is such a great little bit.
Like, I'll leave you to your nap then.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was like, you walk in, you're like, that's fucking Samus. Like, she looks extremely out of place in this world. And you talk to her, she's like, I'm tired. I just beat Mother Brain. Let me nap. That's good. Oh, yeah, that is a great reference. Yeah. Assassin's Creed 2, you meet your Uncle Mario and he says, it's a me, Mario. It's so fucking funny.
I love shameless references like that. Because like some games try to be like really coy about it and like not be overt. And she's like, no, like just reference the thing. Like I think that's gonna do it. Anything y'all want to plug? I know we got a few things coming up this week.
Yeah. So Sunday, not only are we going to be playing Boyfriend Dungeon, but also it'll be the first episode of our new Pokemon Heart Gold Randomizer Nuzlocke coming up, which is an incredibly good episode. I am so excited to see how that turns out. Be very excited for that. I guess just once again, probably if you're watching this, you probably also watch our Ace Attorney Let's Play series, but that is going strong and is super fun. This last week, I think, was one of the funniest ones we've done in a long time.
It was great.
With our Prosecutor Ouchie vampire Ben Shapiro joke, which went on for so long.
It evolved into somehow being correct, which is wild.
yeah that game, I will say, that game series, so many times we will make a joke and then like two voice lines later it's like it confirms the joke that we were making. We're like, what the fuck.
Hell yeah.
It does.
Pridge, anything to plug?
No.
Right, I got one more plug to make. Today is August 13th. 12 days to Psychonauts 2, folks.
Oh my god.
12 days. It'll be available on all your major consoles except Switch, I believe, and will be on Game Pass. So Psychonauts 2, play it. They don't even pay me. I just love the game. Like
Yeah, Christ. Yeah, 2 weeks from today, I will be loading up all my earthly belongings that I can fit into a car and driving to Ohio. So,
yeah, just think about the next Save Data Cast, Psychonauts 2 will be out. I will be talking about playing that game. So I guess I'll make a plug for this. When that game comes out, I will be streaming it probably for several hours straight.
Oh my god.
So stay tuned.
Psychonauts for the real insane person.
We can name it that. That's
and
fine.
It'll just be you.
That's fine. So stay tuned on August 25th and 26th and maybe even 27th. I will probably be playing Psychonauts 2.
You're planning to just stream it every day?
I mean, listen, I do not have the willpower to not play that every day.
Yeah, that's the problem. I was going to say, because then you'd have to like wait several hours not on stream to play it. So I don't think it's the move.
Which is why I'm pretty sure I'm just going to keep playing it on stream every day.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like, oh, we don't have a show until 4:30 my time. That's all right, true. I'm playing from 11 to 4:30.
Well, it comes out on Friday, right? So we won't have a show.
No, it comes out on Wednesday.
And
I think I might actually get it Thursday night. Okay. So I don't know if it's midnight Tuesday night. So
gotcha. No. We cannot respond to this question, but Jason Aaliyah says, I'm sorry, what's Psychonauts?
We'll handle it in the post show. We'll handle it in the post show.
Oh my god.
It has a trope that I didn't talk about. I resisted. We were talking enough about Tails. I was like, I can't bring in my other it's too biased. But that's gonna do it for our show this week. Thank you everyone for tuning in. We appreciate it. If you are watching on YouTube, it would be great if you could give it a listen on a podcast service, rate it. You can search for Save Data on any podcast service out there, and if you search on a podcast service that you like and it's not showing up, please let us know on Twitter or on Discord and we will get it added. It's not too difficult. So I think that's it. So with that, have a wonderful week, everyone. Peace out.
Goodbye,
y'all.